everybody. I'm Phil Parr. We're visiting with Henry Caston today from, you're in Dallas, Texas?
Well, in between Dallas and Fort Worth, Euless.
Euless.
Yeah, it's by the DFW airport. You fly over my head.
Which used to be a nice, quiet, small town, didn't it?
And then I moved in.
But it has grown exponentially in the last 10 years. How long have you lived there?
I've lived here for nearly 20 years.
Nearly 20 years.
So yeah, actually, it was 20 years last month.
So you knew it at one time when it was more of a little bucolic sort of a town.
Well, pretty much. I was kind of guilty of making it where it is now. I was with a development firm. I did all the engineering for the a lot of the developments here in Euless and Colleyville. And I pretty much watched it grow.
You mean the engineering as in laying out the streets or in...
Yeah, laying out the streets, putting in the utilities, shopping centers, houses, restaurants, you name it, apartments. It was a lot of fun.
I imagine it was. Now, this was back during a time when you could see.
Yeah, that was from 20 years ago until 1985. I lost my sight in 1985.
And your level of vision now is zero. You have
I lost it totally. I had
none.
Complications due to diabetes, and in order to, for lack of a better way of putting it, save my life, I lost my eyesight. Small price to pay.
Well, yeah, it certainly is a small price to pay. And this happened at what age were you?
I was 31 years old.
31 years old, and
uh-huh.
And so you're about 51 now.
Well, I'm 50.
So you've been fighting this blindness thing for 20 years or so.
18 years,
and up until then, being blind had not really been in your radar.
I didn't even know anybody that was blind, and much less considered it for myself. I was very healthy. I had better than 20/20 vision. Everything was rocking along, and then one day, actually it was Halloween. I went to pick my son up from they were having a Halloween party, when I was coming home, I went by the office during the party. My wife took him home, and when I came home, I couldn't see. I could see pretty good, but not as good as I normally could. And I was scared that I was going to run over some kid. You know, it was dusk. You know, it was Halloween. People out there trick or treating, so I knew something was up. So I was in an eye study in Houston. So I called my eye doctor, and he said, "You need to come down here." And so that was in November, and they looked, and they said, "Well, things are going to get worse before they get better." And by January, I'd lost my eyesight totally.
And now this started Halloween, which is the 31st of October.
Uh-huh.
And so November, December, by the 1st of January, some early in January, your eyes were gone.
Yeah. I went to a Christmas party, you know, I guess around the middle of December, and I could tell faces and features, and I could use magnifying glasses to see my work. But it was getting to be a struggle, and I kept waiting for it to get better, like the doctor said. And then I had some diabetics have this problem where everything shuts down, and that happened to me in January. And fortunately, I had a doctor who was on top of things, and I was rushed to the hospital, and he was able to save my life. So
yeah.
Well, he helped a lot. Actually, the person who saved my life was my stepdad.
And tell us about that.
Well, see, my dad died when I was pretty young. I guess about the same time I found out I was diabetic. I was 15 years old. And so I've been the man of the house for a while. And when I was a senior in high school, we moved to the Houston area, and my mom met this guy. And I'm sure he made a really good husband as far as a father was concerned. He didn't know how to do that. So I left home about 3 weeks after they got married. And but as I was laying in bed, you know, deciding whether I was going to live or die, I decided I needed to live because I had two little babies, and there was nobody going to make a better dad than me. I'm sure my wife could find another husband, but nobody could make a better father than me. So that was, I said, you know, it was due to my stepdad that I lived because I didn't want her marrying somebody like that. Anyway. You shouldn't record that.
Well, we did, and it's
but,
all right.
There's things that make us the way we are. you know, experiences you, life. That was
you,
one
you
that
are was, the sum of the places you've been and the things you've done, and like it or not, you know,
yeah.
That's this fellow was a part of your, you know, your existence, your psyche.
Well,
now, you know,
I owe him for that.
Yeah.
And we've gotten along pretty well over the years. We get along real well now. I mean, we're not best friends, and I wouldn't pick him as a friend, but he's married to my mom, and I love my mom, and so, you know, I tolerate him.
Yeah, sometimes we have to do that. And you have children of your own?
Yeah, I've got Aaron. He's 23 years old, and he actually lives not far from us with his my sister's two boys. They live in Bedford, and
yeah.
Aaron runs he's one of the managers at the indoor soccer arena. And then my daughter Sarah, she and all my money go to Texas Tech.
She and all your money, huh?
Yeah. In fact, she just called a little while ago. She just finished her second to last final exam for today, and she feels like she did really good.
Yeah. We have a one of Luann's nieces is considering going to Texas Tech, and if you think it's a long way from Dallas, try adding that to 178 miles to Lufkin.
It is a very long way. And that's the only thing I don't like about Lubbock is it is so far away, but she loves it there.
Yeah.
She is doing very well in school, and she finds time to work. She's also a Raider recruiter. I don't know if you know what that is.
A Raider
recruiter. What those are the good-looking girls that go out and solicit football and baseball and basketball players and tell them to come play for Texas Tech.
Oh. So,
but it's above board. They're not like the ones in Colorado.
That's an extracurricular sort of activity.
Yes,
right?
It is. It's very prestigious. It gets her in the right circles, so that you know, she can help with her professional career later on.
Yeah. Well, sounds like your life carried on. That was an awful quick loss. It wasn't. You know our friend Dale Campbell in Houston.
Yeah. Dale had the same kind of deal. Just one day he was fine. The next day, boom, he's in a car accident.
Yeah, but his was all gone. His was a whole lot quicker than yours. His was just, you know, one minute he could see and the next minute he couldn't.
Yeah.
But,
and, you know, that's, you know, I think, you know, some people ask which is better, you know, for it to happen that way or for it to linger for years or be born blind. You know, there is no best or better or good or
That's
bad.
True.
It's like, hey, this is the best hand I got, and I'm going to play it the best I can, you know.
Oh, we have endlessly discussed whether if you're going to be blind, it's better to start out that way. Until I started doing these shows, I thought it was. And then I met folks like Dale and like you who have adjusted seemingly so well to being blind.
Yeah, there are certain, you know, in every aspect there's deficits, and there's you know, positive aspects to it. You know, I've seen Bo Derek. I've seen a perfect 10. But on the other hand, you know, my braille skills, they're terrible. And that's partly because of the diabetes, the neuropathy in my fingertips.
Yeah.
That's also partly because I just don't take the time, and then a large part is because I didn't have to learn it when I was a kid, you know, and it's much easier to do things when you're young than when you're a stubborn old fart like me.
Well, and I talk to people all the time who, and most successful blind people are good Braille readers.
Yeah.
But like you said, most of them started out reading Braille.
And, yeah, but I've got to use Braille. I've got to use it, but I don't use it for reading. I use it for labeling and filing. You know, I couldn't find anything at my office if I didn't have Braille labels.
Yeah.
But, you know, to read a document, give it up.
It would take me, I'd start now, and years from now, I would still not have done it.
Yeah.
I wasn't a good Braille reader, and I'm totally blind, have been since birth. So some are and some aren't. But Braille is not, whether those Braille readers like it or not, is not as necessary for to function as a blind person as it was at one time.
No, it's a useful tool like anything else. You know, the more tools I have in my arsenal, I think the better I am. You know, people say, well, which is better, a cane or a dog or a sighted guide? I say all three. Depends on my situation.
Yeah. Now, you were, say your father died at what age?
I was 13.
You were 13. So you had him up until then. Yours was
I had very loving parents. Both of my parents were able to instill in my two sisters and I the values of public work and community work, that type of thing.
Uh-huh.
They were both very active in our community, and that, I think, rubbed off on all three of us.
Yeah.
My dad, unfortunately, got cancer and died. Last time I saw him, he came home from the hospital. And that next day I went into the hospital because they discovered I was a diabetic.
Yeah.
So the day I got out of the hospital was the day we took him back to the airport. And, you know, so that was the last time I saw him. But the memories are still there, and they're very good, and I feel like I gained a lot from him.
Yeah, and they instilled in you, obviously, that one should get an education, because obviously you did.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I told you I left home when I was 17.
Yeah.
But at the time, I'd already had won a scholarship, a full scholarship to school, contingent on graduation.
Mm-hmm.
So long story short, I was, even though I wasn't going to school, I managed to get a high school diploma. Amazing what you can do with a fancy typewriter and funny paper. But and so I got to go to college and graduated, and that's where I met Janice. I met her just before she graduated. She graduated before I did.
This is your wife?
Uh-huh. And so that was a good deal.
All right, what did you end up with a degree in?
I originally went to become a medical doctor, and after finding out about college life at Stephen F. Austin, there was no way I was going to get into medical school. So,
you know, I'd forgotten that. You came and did some time here in the Piney Woods, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did, and I had some good times there.
I think we discussed on the list, sort of touched briefly, a concert that was held.
Yep.
I think we were both at the same concert.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. I was kind of an entrepreneur with a couple other guys, and back in my freshman year, we started a group called, we were watching TV, and I won't say what we were doing at the time, but it was what people were doing back in the 70s.
Sure.
And, the Raisin for Raisin Bran commercial came on,
uh-huh.
And they're standing out there dancing, you know, and so we're kind of messed up, and we said, hey, let's have a raisin party. And so one guy said, yeah, I got a boat. We'll take it out to this island. So we printed up T-shirts, and we sold the T-shirts. These were purple T-shirts that said Raisin on it. And with the proceeds from the T-shirts, we bought a bunch of kegs and whatever else and ferried people from the mainland to the island, and we had a hell of a good party.
That's wild.
And so that led to a second Raisin party the second year, and then we realized that it was not a good idea anymore because the police had caught on. So we didn't do it in the third year. The third time, somebody else tried it, and they all went to jail, but we weren't involved with that. But that's when we started. I don't know if you went to a bunch of backwoods. We used to call them woodsies.
Yeah.
We'd all go in the woods and drink and have a good time.
Build a fire.
Yeah. Big bonfire. We said, well, I hung out with a bunch of musicians. Let's see if we can get a generator out here and build a stage.
Yeah.
So we did that, and we used the same idea as the Raisin Party, and we had a backwoods beer festival, and we made T-shirts for that, and your T-shirt was your pass into this, you know, place where you could go and drink beer and have a good time and not worry about anything. And that grew and grew to to a big festival that is still going on now, once a year out in the Piney Woods, Piney Woods Festival now.
But you realized that after this college behavior, it was going to be pretty difficult to get into medical school.
Well, after my third semester...
Yeah.
I was on scholastic probation.
Yes.
And the people that had my scholarship called me in and said, we're taking your scholarship away if this fourth semester you don't show some marked improvement.
Uh-huh.
And so I was studying biology and chemistry and physics, and I said, I can do that. And so I learned real quick how to party and study at the same time. It's just before I was partying or not studying. So I turned everything around, but I couldn't bring my GPA up high enough to get into medical school. And so I graduated with a degree in biology and chemistry and became a biochemist for a couple of years. And got in a fight with the professor I was working with, so I quit and got a job as a teacher for the High School for Engineering Professions. And while there, I realized my old dream of being an architect or an engineer, and I went back to school at University of Houston. And 2 years later, I was working as a structural engineer.
I'll be darned.
Did that in Houston, and then moved up here and did land planning and development for a couple of years until I lost my sight. And then foolishly retired. I didn't know what to do. My boss didn't know what to do. He said, well, you got this great retirement package. You might as well take advantage of it. So I retired. But
you're back to work now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I retired for 2 years and did a lot of good stuff for the disabilities movement here in the Metroplex. But I wasn't making any money doing it.
Yeah.
And the quality of life was not where I wanted it to be, so I said I needed to go back to work. So I went back to work. I'm working for the Corps of Engineers. Been there for 15 years now, and I like what I do.
All right, well, let's take a short break, and I want to get into what you do for them.
Okay.
In just a second, we'll be back with more of our little show called Blind Like Me. Hang on.
Gonna set you free. Sure as that river is gonna run to the sea. Sure as the sun's gonna shine. She's there for me.
Facts about blind folk. Information you probably never need. Titillating tidbits to make you think on the blind side. Here's Mark Christie.
Born in 1951, Mark Marais was the second in a family of six children. His blindness was caused by an overexposure of oxygen after his premature birth. He began his education at the Iowa Braille and Sight Saving School, where he became an avid Braille reader. Marais ran three different businesses before finishing high school: a paper route, a lawn care business, and an enterprise producing and marketing maternity garter belts designed by his mother. In the summer of 1969, after graduating from high school, Marais enrolled as a student at the Orientation and Adjustment Center of the Iowa Commission for the Blind. This was a new phenomenon in his experience and changed his life. Marais graduated cum laude from the University of Notre Dame in 1974. As an undergraduate, he took an active part in campus life, including election to the Honor Society. He then enrolled in the University of Indiana School for Law, where he received his Doctor of Jurisprudence in 1977. During law school, Marais worked summers for the office of the Secretary of State of Indiana. After graduation, he moved to Toledo, Ohio, to accept a position as the director of the Senior Legal Assistant Project, operated by ABLE. In 1978, he moved to Washington, D.C., to become an attorney in the office of the General Counsel of the Civil Aeronautics Board. In 1981, he went into private practice in Baltimore, Maryland, where he specialized in civil litigation and property matters. But increasingly, he concentrated on representing blind individuals and groups in the courts. He has now become one of the most experienced and knowledgeable attorneys in the country regarding the laws, precedents, and administrative rulings concerning the civil rights and discrimination against the blind. On the Blind Side.
On the Blind Side. Celebrating the contribution of blind people to societal evolution.
Like me, Henry Kasten from, did you say Euless?
Euless,
Texas, between Dallas and Fort Worth, in what we Texans they refer to as the Metroplex.
Yeah.
And it is a huge area with 3.5 million people or so all grouped together and all congregated. And you're a gentleman who lost your eyesight at about age 28. And so
31.
Oh, you're 31. Okay.
Yeah,
so
he
went down.
I'm older than that. So 31
was fine. 31
was fine. Yeah, it's been gone for almost a little over 18 years.
And so you, at that point in time, retired and decided, well, life is probably over.
No.
What I'm going to do, but you were wrong. Life is not over. Life holds many more things for you, and it, like, as we always say, it's just a...
Well, you know what really happened, Phil, was when I lost my sight, I took this early retirement, and that's when I realized very quickly how I had lost all of my civil rights that I took for granted earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, couldn't vote, couldn't do this, couldn't do that. Because I lived between Dallas and Fort Worth, I couldn't get any of the facilities that were available for people with disabilities. I said, this is a bunch of crap. And so I started looking for people who were like-minded and met up with about a half a dozen of them. We formed an organization called REACH, and we decided to screw all state agencies. We were going to create our own organization and help people with disabilities the way they should be helped. And REACH is now a pretty formidable force for assisting people with disabilities in Texas.
Now, you realized that you were out in an area where there was no mass transit.
Yeah.
No buses. There was no handy ride.
Not a thing. So I said, that's got to change, too. So I went from city to city to city. I do a lot of public speaking and was doing it prior to losing my eyesight, and so it was just natural. People like me. I have a way of, you know, most people like me, not all people, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I went from city to city to city and saying, this is the right thing to do. You need to put in some money and get a paratransportation system. And so because of that, we now have Northeast Transportation System, or NETS.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just takes a little elbow grease and, you know, a lot of time and not giving up and being able to convince people by twisting their arms and kicking them in the shins.
And so you found other blind people or other physically handicapped people or what?
To join this organization, I said we need to have at least two members on the board of directors, no more than two members on the board of directors from one disability group. So there'd be like two blind people, two deaf people, two people that were paraplegic, mentally whatever, you know. so, and able-bodied people, too.
Yeah,
we had representatives from the various support groups for people with disabilities on our board. And these were people that were advocates for people with disabilities. They were smart people. They weren't afraid of hard work. And you know, we put together a great organization. Like I said, one of the things that came out of it was this Independent Living Center, which is a model for all independent living centers. We got NETS, which is still in, you know, if I need to get a ride, I just call NETS. And so, you know, we started an a group that...
Well, wait, but you need to back up a little bit.
Sure.
How did you... You couldn't put an ad in the paper, we need two deaf people. How did you find people to...
Oh, that was really easy. I called Advocacy Incorporated, and I said, advocacy means something to me. What does it mean to you? These guys were in Austin. I said, I need to find some people here in Dallas-Fort Worth who you know are interested in the rights of people with disabilities. And I said, well, we just happen to know some people, and they gave me some names. So I called them up, and I said, hey, I'm interested in sitting down and talking with you all about some of the issues that I'm finding and, you know, some remedies. You know, I'm a problem solver. Sometimes people don't need problems solved, but, you know, I'm out there, and I can figure out ways to do it. So that's how we started meeting, and within a year, we'd won a $100,000 grant that was renewable for 3 years. And, you know, it took some writing, it took some coordination, it took a lot of finding and searching out the right kind of people.
Okay, so you established a nonprofit group.
Yeah, we got our nonprofit, our IRS status.
Yeah.
We started a corporation. And, the toughest part was getting the money. It was easy to find people.
You know, the toughest part was getting someone to give you a grant?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, none of us had very much experience in writing grant proposals.
Sure.
And, you know, we just had to sit down and do it. And we got one. So.
And all right, now, what independent living center? You glossed over that.
REACH.
I know nothing about that. Tell us about that.
Okay. Well, it initially started off as an organization, not necessarily as an ILC, Independent Living Center. What we wanted to do was be an advocate. Education, that's REACH stands for Rehabilitation, Education, Advocacy for Citizens with Handicaps. And that's exactly what we wanted to do. We wanted to have a center where if you had a disability or you knew somebody had a disability and you were seeking information or help or assistance, here's a phone number you can call and you will have a person who will listen to you and has at their fingertips the answers that you're looking for.
Uh-huh.
And if they don't have them at their fingertips, they can get back to you within a day or two. That's the kind of people that we wanted in our organization. And that's what we got. It wasn't like the Texas Commission for the Blind, where you were lucky if you got somebody who was vested and interested. It wasn't at all like the Texas Rehabilitation Commission, you know, who were... I don't want to go there.
Yeah, I don't have a Texas Rehabilitation Commission. I know nothing about. I know a lot about the Commission for the Blind. And it's really funny because after looking at the list and talking to other people, they're all like that.
Well, they are. You know, what struck me right off the bat was when I lost my sight and I went to the Texas Commission for the Blind, first they had to make sure that I was capable of being a functional blind person. So I take all these...
Yeah, the first thing they did was sent you to an eye doctor to make sure you couldn't see.
Right. Yeah.
And the fact that you ran into the door on the way in, I guess that wasn't enough.
No, I had to prove it. So, yeah. But then, after taking all these tests and stuff like that, I had to go to this guy who was going to see if I was trainable.
Uh-huh.
So he's doing all this stuff, and we sit and we talk, and he gives me these tests to do and screw pen caps together and build bridges out of, metal... girders and stuff, and he says, you know what? He knows what my salary is that I'm making on my disability insurance.
Yeah.
He says, you make more money than I do working. Why are you looking for a job? I said, because I'm 31 years old, and I need to find work. You know, I'm too young to retire.
I'd like to do something rather than just sit home.
Yeah, he says, well, why don't you just do flea marketing? I said, because I'm an engineer. That's not my bag. So I don't understand why you want to go to work. You're making plenty of money. It wasn't about the money. And no, I wasn't making plenty of money. I maybe compared to that guy, but he was a loser. You know, money is not the end all and be all, but it sure as hell helps.
They're very, I suppose in certain instances, I mean, they do help some blind people.
Well,
but they've
gone through some changes over the last 18 years, and I hope it's for the positive. I know they didn't do anything to assist me. In fact, I was supposed to get hired by Sprint.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted a project manager, and the guy was convinced I could do the work. And he says, well, how will you make the computer work? I said, well, I had a pretty good idea. I said, but the Texas Commission for the Blind has experts at this. Why don't you call them? I'm going up to get my first dog guide next week. You talk to them while I'm gone, and then when I get back, I'll come in with my dog, and we'll see how it works.
Yeah.
So he says, fine. I get back, and the guy didn't want to talk to me. So finally, I talked to his assistant. He says, well, you lied to him. I said, I didn't lie to him. He says, well, he didn't want to talk to you because he thinks you lied to him. I said, I lied to him about what? He says, there's no computer programs out there that'll work. They sent a guy out here, and he said, there's no way a blind guy could do this job. So thank you very much, Texas Commission for the Blind. So I didn't get that job.
But we know now that there are.
That guy didn't know me. He never even met me. He didn't know what I was capable of. Hell, I didn't even know what I was capable of.
No, you didn't. And so you went and got a guide dog.
Yeah, I went up to C&I, and I got my first dog, Falcon, and came back and eventually got a job with Corps of Engineers.
Now, let's just touch one more time on this independent living center. Are there people housed there, or
What they do is they can provide you with information, they can provide you with education, they can provide you with training, but it's not an apartment. But they can find you an apartment where they have assisted living. They can find you an apartment to show you how to cook for yourself and do stuff. They do have that, but it's not like a dormitory.
Okay.
Or something.
What you mean by independent living is teaching you how to live independently.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So you're
I
not.
Got your point.
You know, none of us are totally independent. I don't care whether you're blind or sighted or whatever. We're all dependent. You know, hell, I can't fly anywhere without a pilot. You know, doesn't have anything to do with my blindness. All have to rely on others, and it's just a matter of realizing what our perceived limitations are.
Uh-huh.
And then seeing if we can go beyond those And, you know, it's like I said, I don't know what I can do, and I don't know what I can't do.
Now, most of these people who if you, I guess there's a number you can call if you need training for some independent living skills. Are most of these people volunteers, or are they paid?
Some of them are paid, and most are volunteers. It's like any organization like that where you have your executive director and some paid staff. But that's part of the umbrella. The biggest part of the umbrella is all volunteers.
But there's no bureaucracy. Everybody there helps in some way.
Yes.
Make the organization work.
Yes. Now I'm not going to lie to you and tell you it's a perfect organization.
Yeah.
But it's something I can certainly be proud of. You know, that I was instrumental in getting it going.
And this came from a seed that germinated in your mind.
Mine and several other people. I just happened to be the charter president. You know, I have some abilities and some skills that allowed me to, take that organization to where it needed to be.
And so you went from city to city to all these little towns that are now
part of
the Metroplex, and
yeah.
You convinced them to put together a group and start a paratransit?
Right. The way that we're set up here in the Metroplex and in many other places, you know, Fort Worth has its transportation system, Dallas has its transportation system, but it's only within the city limits.
Mm-hmm.
So there are 42 independent government entities in the Metroplex. So you have to get all 42 to agree to something if you want it to happen, or at least the majority of them.
And that's pretty hard to do.
Well, it's impossible.
Yeah.
But you can still get most of them. And so what I did is, for the ones that were along the corridor by the airport, that was Grapevine and Colleyville and Euless and Bedford and Hearst and so on and so forth, I went to the city council meetings. I explained to them that this was a good thing to do. It was only going to cost them at the time $10,000. And I said, you guys have strapped budgets. It's the right thing to do. Can I guarantee that you're going to have ridership? No. But I can guarantee you this, in years you will, once the word is out that this organization, this transportation service is in place. And so a lot of them, you know, I had to convince, you know, I'd find out who were the guys that were sitting on the fence, who were the definite naysayers,
mm-hmm.
and I took them aside, and I worked them over until they were either going to kill me or convinced that it was the right thing to do, and they voted in my favor. So it passed.
And so you got how many of these 42 different independent governments to agree?
I can't say for sure, but most of them.
And how did you come up with the $10,000 figure? Did you get someone to do, well, I guess you're...
Yeah, the people that are actually running the service, Northeast Tarrant Service,
uh-huh.
They said if you get this many, it'll be $10,000. You know?
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I don't do all the work. I do a lot of it, but there's other people who are, you know, behind the scenes that are providing, you know, providing me and other people with the data, the information that you need to make things happen.
Now, is the ridership, do people use this service?
Well, that was in 1986, 87.
Uh-huh.
It's still going on. If I need a ride, I just call NETS.
And they'll take you anywhere in the Metroplex?
No, they will only take me to the Fort Worth or Dallas city limits, and that's where I can catch the T in Fort Worth or DART in Dallas.
Yeah, so you could have a DART van waiting for you there. I mean,
there
you
is
can
allegedly a pickup point there, but I've never used it. Most of the business I take care of is right here in the Metroplex.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, you know, that's for my doctors. I use it for doctors' office visits. You know, if you need a haircut.
And you got all 42 people to sign on?
No.
No.
But I got most of them.
So there are still some who didn't put in their money.
That's correct.
And you're still working on them, or
no? I stopped working with Reach in '89.
This is when you went back to work.
I went back to work in '88, and I tried doing both. I couldn't do both. I was not going to be successful, and you know, with both groups, I couldn't do a good job with both.
But this organization is still going on, and this operates 24 hours a day, or
the Reach, you know, it's got regular working hours, and NETS has regular working hours.
And so you have to call and make an appointment.
You have to make an appointment,
and
it's curb to curb service,
mm-hmm.
and it's paratransportation, and it's it's not bad.
Now, do they have vans with wheelchair lifts and things
yes.
like that?
Uh-huh. So it's for anybody. It's anybody that's elderly, anybody with a wheelchair, anybody with a disability, and their kids or family members.
And this also came from an idea that you had.
Yeah, because I couldn't get anywhere unless I had my wife or neighbors take me. And, you know, that's beginning to be a pain in the rear end, you know, always having to bug the same people all the time to get anywhere. You know, and I could have sold my house and moved to Fort Worth and moved to Dallas, but I didn't want to do that. I liked where I lived.
Yeah, from what I've read on the list, you have a really nice place.
Well, I live in a very nice community. I'm well-known. I'm well-respected. And, you know, and that was prior to losing my eyesight. And then after losing my eyesight, I just got even more respect. So, you know, I like where I live. And the people here like me.
But you don't just have a lot. You have some property there, don't you?
No,
don't you?
No. I just got a little old house in the middle of a neighborhood.
Well, I thought you were talking about going fishing at is there a neighborhood lake there or something? Didn't I read something
Bad
on
Dog Lake, but no.
I thought I read something on the list about you. Maybe I'm confusing with somebody
else. Yeah, you're confusing with Dale or somebody.
Dale's going on a trip this weekend.
He's going to go.
Man, what a trip. I'd like to be doing that. Anyway, he couldn't do cooking, so we'll have to do that next week. All right, we're going to get into what you do for your on your day job.
Yeah, Corbin.
Well, we're your second break time, so let's take that.
Okay.
And then we'll come back and talk about what you did before as opposed to what you do now.
Sure.
So back with more of our Blind Like Me show in just a second. In case you are a new listener to our show called Blind Like Me, let me remind you of the lists that we have going, which are numerous and growing all the time. We also, of course, as most of you know, do a show called The Blind Handyman. We have a list thing for The Blind Handyman, and it's just very simple. It's blindhandyman-subscribe at yahoogroups.com. That will get you on the list. You'll get something confirming you are subscribing to the list, and then you'll be a member of our Blind Handyman list. And if you do handyman things around the house, it is the place to be if you have a question concerning anything that you do. We have many experts who know many, many things on our handyman list. Lots of folks who had sight and lost their sight and are experts in air conditioning and plumbing and carpentry of all kinds and home maintenance, drywall, whatever you want to do. You can find an answer to, I would say, virtually any question you'd have concerning handyman things on the Blind Handyman list, blindhandyman at subscribe at yahoogroups.com. We also have here a Blind Like Me list, and that is Blind Like Me subscribe at yahoogroups.com, and that'll get you on the Blind Like Me list. And it's just kind of a silly list. We don't talk about anything too serious there and don't ever intend to. It's just sort of a fluff list, as it were. We talk about all kinds of things. But if you're having some sort of independent living problem or some sort of thing that you'd like to discuss, something maybe that you want to talk about with other blind people, just get their opinion on, it's a great list to do that. Lots of nice folks and lots of good comments on that list. And that's Blind Like Me at subscribe at yahoogroups.com. If you want to get a hold of me and you'd like to be a guest on either show, either Blind Like Me or The Blind Handyman, I'm just Phil, PHILPARR, at TXU.com. TXU, Tom X-Ray Unit. Tom X-Ray United, TXUcom.net, Phil Parr at TXUcom.net, or you can call me at 936 634-9500, and come and participate and tell your life story on Blind Like Me, or talk about handyman things on the Blind Handyman. All right, thank much. Back with more in just a second. Henry Caston is our guest from Euless, Texas, which those of you who don't live in Texas, that's a part of the what we call the Metroplex, Dallas-Fort Worth area. Big, large, heavily populated area, not as big as New York, but a massive area of people and lots of traffic and things like that. And we've talked about a couple of things that Henry was instrumental in starting, and that is a transportation system for all, combining all these little outlying, not really outlying, but independent governments, the cities that didn't have a paratransit system, or really a transit system of any kind. He got that going. He got this independent living center, which is not a physical dormitory where people live, but it's people who teach you how to be independent, or help you gain independence if you have a handicap, and not just limited to blind people, but also physically handicapped people or deaf people or people who have any sort of what we call them disabilities now, I think is a better word than handicap. But you work for, have gone back to work for the Corps of Engineers, and you worked for them 15 years now.
Right? That's right.
Now, the Corps of Engineers is a government agency or a...
That's right. It's part of the Department of Defense.
Uh-huh.
It's the one of the oldest government agencies in the United States. It was first formed by George Washington when he realized he needed to have a group of people, engineers in particular, who could put together forts, channels,
yeah,
whatever they needed in case we ever went back to war.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the whole reason for starting the Corps. So we're if not the oldest, one of the oldest agencies. And I started working there, it's almost 16 years now. Prior to losing my eyesight, I was a project engineer. First, I was a structural engineer, and then I did civil land planning and development. That's where we went into an area, decided how to put in roads, utilities, build houses, apartments, movie theaters, whatever. Then I lost my eyesight, and I went to work for the Corps of Engineers. And I went to work in their military construction design branch. And that's where I designed, I was a project manager. I put together a team of architects and engineers, and we would come up with the design for construction of whatever the Army needed, or the Air Force. It was, if they needed an airport, they needed a hospital, if they needed a barracks, they needed a maintenance shop, whatever they needed, we'd design for them, and then I'd hand it off to a construction manager who'd get it built.
Well, I've got to ask, you're saying designing things or architecture, how do you, I know you can conceptualize these things, but how do you transmit what you have in mind to your sighted brethren?
Well, that, one of the lucky things for me is before I lost my sight, I was very heavily into painting and drawing and photography, so I the artistic ability has been transferred to other areas, but I can still sit down and sketch something out. And so I would talk about
Wait, you can sketch something out by using a straight edge or
just a pencil and paper. Or sometimes I'll use a straight edge or a circle or something. But I'll sketch it out and I'll say, is this what you guys are talking about? And they'll say, no. Or they'll say, yeah, you're right on target. And then I'll keep, if they say no, then I gotta have them describe it again, and I'll, say, well, what do you mean? I need to move this over here or move that over here. It looks like the shape of a capital E, or is it,
Still retain the ability to freehand sketch things.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Well,
never met a blind guy who could do that. That's
I had some artistic talent prior to losing my eyesight.
Yeah.
So even after I lost my eyesight, because of that, I would draw out an idea, and then I would take it up to an artist, and I'd say, and we would talk about my idea. I'd show him what I had in mind, or her what I had in mind, and she would draw it out, and take my idea and turn it into a real live drawing. So I did that for a while. Yeah. Same thing with photography. I could set up, you know, in my mind what I wanted something to look like, how I wanted the lighting. And I taught my kids how to take pictures, how to draw. And, you know, the things that I knew, I could pass on to them. So, you know, just because I couldn't see it didn't mean I couldn't still do it.
So, you said a while ago that your son is 20, did you say 23?
Uh-huh.
So he was basically raised by a blind fellow.
Yeah, he was 4 years old. And, you know, again, I'm so lucky to have such great kids.
Yeah.
I came home from the hospital, and we were out in the backyard, and the guy behind us was putting in a swimming pool. So we were standing on the fence, and Aaron's looking over. He's 4 years old. He's like, "What, Dad, what is that?" And I'm explaining to him how a front-end loader works and what it is. You know,
yeah.
I know what it is.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, "Oh, Dad, let me show you something." And right behind us was this grape arbor that I built, and there were little baby grapes there. You know, it's springtime. So he says, "Look at this." And he pulls my hand out. He says, "Look, Dad, grapes." I mean, he had such a wonderful concept of what was going on. And then I don't remember what happened. Sometime later, we came home. We were getting out of the car. And I don't know what the issue was, but I'll never forget. He said, "Dad, you know, you can't see, but it's not the end of the world."
4 years old.
4 years old.
Kids,
you know, Sarah
4 years old.
Was two. So she really never remembers me when I could see, you know.
Yeah, but your son does. Has some memory of you. Anyway, back to this doing things, just as sort of this is on a much smaller scale, but my wife and I decided we built a house.
Uh-huh.
And in 91, got married in 91, built a house. She already kind of had the plans for this house drawn, and then I came along, so some things had to be changed because I needed a studio, and I needed room for to do. I was doing radio from my house at that time, so I needed. So anyway, we had to do some swapping around and make a bedroom into Phil's studio. So what we did is took a couple sets of Lego blocks and built the house on the table, and so we could move walls around and do things like that.
Well, that's when Aaron was in junior high, he had to draw floor plans for the house.
Uh-huh.
So he was having some problems with it, and so what I had him do is take strips of balsa wood and lay them down on top of his lines so I could feel it. Yeah, but the Lego is the same concept.
Would be the same thing. So he was drawing floor plan of his house?
Uh-huh. But he was having troubles because, you know, his measurements weren't that accurate. So the walls weren't joining up.
Okay, so you took little balsa wood.
I could show him where his problems were.
Yeah, people make fun of me because I've got in one of my little organizers a drawer full of popsicle sticks.
Oh, yeah, they're great.
For that very thing.
I'm a very graphic individual, you know, which sucks when you're blind. But that's how I communicate. I have to show things. Kids will want to see something. I say, "Wait a minute, give me a pencil and paper. Let's draw it out." Or like when they're doing math homework, I'd have to write out the stupid problems. I couldn't see them, but I could write them out. And, you know, I could come up with the answers in my head, but I had to write them out.
So I wonder how far we are from you being able to do, and you may already be able to do, some of this with your computer.
Well, I'm limited, you know, to what the technology is. But, you know, as I said, I did military construction design, and I moved on and became an environmental engineer, and I did that for 7 years. And that's just basically learning and understanding and knowing the laws and regulations, and you know what goes on. And then a year and a half ago, or a little less than a year and a half ago, I got put in charge of this new program, Field Force Engineering. And there I'm again a project manager of various projects that come our way, and I have to use my experience as well as my expertise in coming up with solutions. Now, I may not be able to do the mathematics or the actual design, but I can tell somebody how to do it, and I can tell them the best place to find it. You know, and some things are pretty obvious because I have the experience. You know, they had this... they had a checkpoint in Iraq, and they needed to put a shelter up, a shade structure, because you know it gets so hot there.
Sure.
And but because it's Iraqis coming in, they also have to have a line of sight from a machine gunner as well as an M1 or an Abrams tank. So that makes it very difficult when you have a roof over top. So I had to come up with a design that would work with that. And we came up with a pretty good design. I worked with a couple of architects, and, you know, I was able to have some really good input into that.
And so that eventually got built?
It's being done right now.
Being built right now.
So yeah, I'd have to shoot you if I told you where.
Well, heavens, not today.
Not today.
So, but so building, you were primarily the Corps of Engineers, where you work builds things for the military, and not only the military here, but military at wartime. Like
that's correct.
Like what else? Like barracks, like prisons, like mess halls, like what?
Well, the project I just finished Tuesday was a mail distribution center.
Okay.
The mail comes into the soldiers, and it has to have a place to come into. Now, originally, there was a commercial company delivering the mail, but when they got one of their jets shot down, they said, we don't want to do this anymore.
Sure.
So we built a facility. It's being built now. But the design got completed last Tuesday. We built the fire station for the Iraqis. Now that was a very interesting project because they wanted it built to Iraqi standards. Yeah, or the Iraqis have no standards.
Well, I was going to say, what would be the difference? What would be the difference in their standards and ours?
We have standards; they don't have any. We believe in life safety. You know, in other words, they gave us an example of a fire station they wanted built. They want it to look just like what they're used to. You know, two stories with one stairway up, not a second stairway. Mm-hmm. You know, a typical third world bathroom. That's a hole.
Yeah.
No, like I said, nothing to protect the people inside. So we made some compromises.
But you didn't build it like that. You built it to American standards.
No, we built them to a in-between.
Okay. All right.
Because we weren't, you know, they didn't want it to our standards, but we said, you know, there's some things we're going to have to do. We're not going to put our names on something that, you know, is we think is dangerous. So...
All right, now, I've heard, since I live in East Texas, there are lots of lakes around here, and you hear, Sam Rayburn is a Corps of Engineers lake.
That's correct.
And Lake Livingston is not. What makes one a Corps of, what's the difference? Did the Corps of Engineers...
The Corps of Engineers designed it, built it, and operates it. So if it's a Corps lake, then it's operated by the Corps of Engineers.
And if it's not, it's operated by the state or by the county or by somebody.
Yes.
Now, the Corps of Engineers, all Corps of Engineers lakes, I noticed, or I found out, will not let you put a pier on your... If you buy a lake house, you can't have a pier on at your lake house. Do you know the reason for that?
I don't do those type of civil works projects. I'm not involved in those.
You're not involved in those.
And I would be guessing, and so rather than guess, I'd rather say I don't know.
Okay. Obviously, I was asking for selfish reasons because Sam Rayburn is closer, and I'd love to buy a lake house over there, but I don't want a lake house that I can't have a little pier that I can go out on and fish. If I decide to do that at 2 o'clock in the morning, I don't want to have somebody run me to the boat ramp to launch my boat.
Yeah. Well, you know. Let me check on that. We'll get back.
Check on that, and you get back to me.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you've been working for these folks 20-something years, 15 years.
Yeah, boy, you are trying to make me old.
I am, aren't I? So obviously they're gonna keep you on, and you're doing a job that would not normally be thought of as a job a blind person would do.
In fact, most people who work with me have a clue that I'm blind. You know, unless there's a reason for them to know, I don't tell them. You know, like this guy that I'm working with in Iraq, he wrote me back after we finished the project, and it said, you know, it was just really, it's been such a pleasure working with you.
Yeah.
Now that I got that message from him the morning after I got that award for being the person with disabilities of the year. Now that's a double-edged sword, you know, the disabilities award deal. And I wasn't sure how to take that. You know, I'm really proud that, you know, of my accomplishments, but I like to be compared with my able-bodied peers.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Not necessarily so I'm thinking, you know, this made me feel good to get that message from him because he has no idea that I'm blind.
Well, since you touched on this, I was going to. But let's go into this. You got an award for being disabled person of the year from who now?
That's from the district that I work in. There's about 900 employees, and somebody nominated me, and I was selected.
Now, the district that you work in, as in the Corps of Engineer district that you work in?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so it was, okay, I got your point. So, but there are other disabled people who work there.
Yes.
Who, and
they're hearing impaired. There are some people that are visually impaired. No, I'm the only person that's totally blind. But mobility impaired people.
Yeah, what you'd rather had would have been the engineer of the year.
Well, I'll never get that because I don't do pure engineering anymore.
Because you don't do pure engineering. Happy with
that.
No,
it was just a nice award.
It is. It's a very nice award.
And it was nice that they thought. And what the best part about it was the thoughtful messages that I got back from the people I work with.
But you the know, guy in Iraq didn't know you were blind.
Well, you know.
No idea.
Our colonel, he's the guy that runs he's the division engineer. Came by and he says, Henry, you know, I want to let you know that you got this award. And I just never think of you as being disabled. Now, that's a compliment.
Yeah, you always wonder if people mean that, but I guess they do. People, you know, people tell you that, you know, I never think of you as blind.
No. Well, I, you know, it's except for the stupid dog I got by my side, you wouldn't know. Well, he's not so stupid.
Well, he's not leads you around. Don't call him stupid. He may run you into something.
He does.
Henry Caston, we're going to go and let you continue with your well-deserved day off.
Well, thank you.
And this has been, as far as I'm concerned, a very informative, nice interview. And carry on. And we will. I'll let you know when we get ready to run this. Sounds like you have your life together. And enjoy the rest of your day, sir.
Well, thank you. And I'll get back with you, Phil, and let you know about that pier.
Let me know, sir. Thank you much.
Okay, you take care. Bye-bye.